Welcome to the fifth kind.
What made the Book of Enoch important enough to preserve, but so controversial that it needed to be buried? In the pages of Enoch, what was it that so impressed the early church fathers, but ultimately ensured that the book would be excluded from the canon of the Bible? What was the secret that religious authorities were so anxious to suppress? The Qumran Caves on the northern shore of the Dead Sea. It was in caves hidden in these Judean mountains that an ancient religious community hid its precious archives of papyrus scrolls and manuscripts. In 1947, a shepherd, throwing rocks, was surprised by the sound of a breaking pot. When he investigated, he realized he'd stumbled upon an incredible treasure trove of ancient texts. Between 800 and 900 manuscripts have since been recovered, among them some of the most important historic and religious texts ever found. Among them, the Book of Enoch. The earliest version of the Book of Enoch is the Ethiopian Book. Ethiopia is home to the one church communion that accepts the Book of Enoch within the canon of the Bible. The Ethiopian Book comprises the Book of Watchers, the Parables of Enoch, the Astronomical Book or the Book of Luminaries, the Book of Dreams, and the Epistle of Enoch. Many of its themes echo the aspirations and concerns of many of the Hebrew scriptures, but other themes occur within its pages that are more unusual. The current scrolls date from the 3rd to the 1st century BCE. The source of their narratives and their authorship remain a mystery.
The book is attributed to Enoch, but that doesn't settle the question of its authorship, because just as the historic Moses didn't necessarily write all the books of Moses, or the prophet Isaiah didn't necessarily write all the books of Isaiah, so the authorship of the Book of Enoch remains a bit of a mystery. But Enoch himself is a fascinating figure and very intriguing. He's an ancestor of Noah. Noah is his great-grandson. And he himself, Enoch, is the great-great-great-great-grandson of Adam and Eve, which, if you think about it, if I'm doing my maths right, means he had 62 other great-great-great-great-grandparents in the same generation as Adam and Eve. So, just taking the narrative on its own terms, who were they? I mean, that's a mystery on a mystery.
Scholars believe the Qumran community to have been home to the Essenes, a secretive monastic community, and the caves in the Judean mountains, their high-security archive.
The evidence is that the Qumran community was part of the movement of Essenes, which was a monastic-style community of that time. And you can see why they would have loved the book. There are many themes that would have been important to them. But there's a section in chapters 85 to 90 of prophetic texts, and many people read them as prophesying the advent of various tribes and empires, and then they appear to foretell the advent of the Essenes themselves, and then Jesus of Nazareth, and then the 12 apostles of Christianity. And it wasn't only the Essenes who held this book in high regard. Many of the early church fathers quoted from this book freely, and they referred to it as to scripture. And that would include writers like Tertullian, Justin Martyr, Origen, Clement of Alexandria, all referring to this as if it were part of their canon. I think it's very significant that the New Testament writer Jude, when he wants to quote the Enoch of the Bible, the Enoch of Genesis 5, he quotes the book of Enoch word for word. And in the writings of Peter in the New Testament, he refers to the events and ideas of the book as if he expects his readers to know it. So I think the importance of those references cannot be exaggerated. They believed their readers were familiar with this book and should be taking it seriously. It is a book of great importance if we want to understand the view of the ancients with regard to human origins.
Given the high regard in which the book was held in ancient times, what was it about the book's contents that made it so controversial that it had to be excluded from the official canons? In chapters 1 to 36, we read the Book of Watchers. It details contact between entities from off-planet and human beings. Some of that contact is benign and nurtures the emergence of human society. The Watchers teach the humans how to cultivate crops, how to use medicine and other healing modalities. The Watchers teach metal technology and introduce the humans to adornments, jewelry, and makeup.
That aspect of off-planet people, the Watchers, coming and teaching Homo sapiens how to farm and to build a civilization, that marks the Book of Enoch out as very different to the books that we find within the canon of the Bible. But it is not a unique story. That narrative repeats in mythologies all around the world. You can find it in Native American mythology, Mayan, Zulu, Babylonian, all make the claim that in our prehistoric past there was an intervention. People from off-planet came and nurtured the human race as a conscious, intelligent, technological species and gave us the building blocks of civilization. But though that narrative has been allowed to remain in indigenous mythologies all around the world, it seems that that admission of a wider ET family was an admission that the Jewish and Christian religious authorities were not willing to make.
Of all the lessons given by the Watchers, one that concerns much of the Book of Enoch is the lesson in astronomy.
This is another aspect in which Enoch differs from the other Jewish texts. Astronomy or astrology, which were all part of the same thing at that time, not favorably looked upon in the Bible, but it's there as a theme in Enoch. Again, where there's a point of difference from the other Jewish writings, Enoch finds correlations in other world mythologies. The moment you listen to other world mythologies, you hear the same notes. Mayan astronomy is a byword for sophistication. Egyptian, Sumerian, think about the Dogon people with their knowledge of the Sirius star system. In Enoch, we're told about the movement of the moon around the earth around the sun, the fact that the moon reflects the sun's light, the nature of eclipses and the cycles of the moon. How was the writer shown that? Did he see it in the flesh? Did he physically travel? Was it through an altered state of consciousness? Was he shown textbooks? Was it a remote viewing? By the time we're in the late chapters of the Book of Enoch, the suggestions are there that it was all of those.
Among its most explosive claims is the book's account of the abduction of human females by 200 of the Watchers. Their offspring are described as giants. The name the Book of Genesis gives them is Nephilim. Greek legend calls them the Titans, and mythologies all around the world tell their own versions of this intriguing episode. Writing in the first century of the Common Era, the Jewish historian Josephus refers to the ancestral memory of human abductions and hybridization unpacked by the Book of Enoch.
Josephus refers to that as history, and he points to the existence of giants in his own time as material evidence of that ancient intervention. Now, it's interesting that he also notes that the Greek legends have maintained a written tradition of that story. He also refers back, of course, to Genesis chapter 6, where the story of abductions and hybridization is told so briefly, so swiftly, that it's quite, and with no introduction of these random characters turning up to do this, that it's quite clear that the writer of Genesis 6 assumes his readers already know this story from another source.
Yet the narrative of human abductions is an aspect of the book which remains the hardest for many to process.
Enoch may well be the Bible's first abductee, although he may have been a willing one. When we read chapters 18 and 81, we see Enoch being given a year's notice before the watchers take him. If we go to Genesis and read chapter 5, verse 24, it tells us this about Enoch. It says, Enoch walked 365 years, and then the Elohim took him away. Now, that word Elohim means the powerful ones. So, the watchers in the book of Enoch are among the Elohim, the powerful ones, of the biblical narrative. If we go to Genesis 6, where we find the Bible's reference to the watchers coming, it describes them as Bene Elohim, and that word means they are a kind of Elohim. So the watchers of the book of Enoch are Bene Elohim, or Elohim, in the biblical text. Now, if you dig a little deeper, you go to the source narratives on which those early biblical stories are based, you're going to find yourself in the Sumerian texts, and they speak about sky people or star people. And among those people, 300 are dispatched to what they call stations in the stars, which I think we would call space stations. And their job is to work as observers. That's the word used in the Sumerian, observers. So, watchers in the book of Enoch, observers in the Sumerian narrative. I don't think that is a coincidence.
So why didn't the book of Enoch make it into the canon of the Bible?
There's a very broad consensus among biblical scholars today that the Hebrew stories of beginnings took their current shape through decisions and edits made sometime in the 6th century BCE. In Christianity, decisions were made from the 2nd century onwards that shaped up what was to become the New Testament and made the call to glue it to the Hebrew canon to create a Christian Bible. Now, all those decisions were taken on the basis of a monotheistic worldview, and so the edits in the Hebrew scriptures were to monotheize them. And their worldview was that we are alone in the universe. And so when they found other texts, including the book of Enoch, where so much is going on that acknowledge other entities, off-planet entities, entities that seem to have intergalactic technology or even interdimensional technology, they could not admit those because in the language of the ancients, they simply presented too many gods. My book, Escaping from Eden, argues that this edit made in the 6th century BCE of the Hebrew canon may have solved the problem of too many gods, but by conflating the idea of God with these other ET entities, which in the Bible are just a translation away from being blindingly obvious, by doing that, the editor has taken the ET narrative and pushed it almost out of sight. And at the same time, he hopelessly confuses how we understand God in the Bible, because we end up blaming God for things that were really the responsibility of ET entities in their interactions with ancient human beings. I believe that, correctly translated, the Bible is peppered from start to finish with non-human entities. Think about the Nephilim, the Anakim, the Elohim, the Bene Elohim, the Sky Council, the one like a human being in the book of Ezekiel. These are strands within the biblical tradition that the institutional Judaism and Christianity of the day did not want to do business with and just tactfully ignored. the Book of Enoch, by being so specific about them, blows all that open.
With a worldview that says there's no such thing as an ET, monotheizing the canon of the Bible had to mean excluding these other narratives. Why was the narrative of ancient ET contact suppressed? What was so taboo about reporting the Watcher's role in our Great Leap Forward? Why was the narrative of human abduction and hybridization allowed to remain in other indigenous mythologies around the world, but excised from Judaism and Christianity? And what agenda did that secrecy serve? And are we entering a period where the veil of that secrecy is now being lifted? Thank you for watching The Fifth Kind. We hope you enjoyed this thought-provoking program. With ever-changing algorithms, updates, and censorship regulations on YouTube, this video and others like it could soon become much harder to find. If you like our work, and you'd like to know whenever we publish our latest videos, it's really important that you click the bell icon and turn on channel notifications just next to the subscribe button. Please like and share this video and help make sure this type of content stays around and is available for others who may be seeking it. Please check out our official website at www.thefifthkind.com, where you can sign up to receive our latest newsletters, stories, and select featured content that is only available on alternative platforms. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.